As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello everyone and welcome to The Ruck from The Times and The Sunday Times, and straight away you can hear, can't you, that we're on tour. So let's set the scene. We're up at Heriot Watt University, or at least a hotel next to it, hence the background noise of cutlery clanging and all sorts. We're on the outskirts of Edinburgh because today is going to all be about Scotland, head of the Six Nations and their opening game against Wales. We wanted to take the temperature and a bit of lunch north of the border. And I'm here in Edinburgh with our Scottish supremo, the Scotch to my gin and tonic, our Times and Sunday Times Scottish rugby correspondent, Mark Palmer. How are you, Mark?
Very well, thanks, Phil. Great to have you back where it all began.
Yeah, yes, yes. So for listeners that don't know and don't extensively follow my career, and why would you have done? I did used to do a podcast up in Scotland when I covered this as a graduate, so it's all come full circle. Nice to see you, Mark. We usually see you virtually, but you're in full array today.
Full technicolour. it must be that time of year again, wasn't it? But all getting very close now.
Yeah, yeah. So what we're going to do today, listeners, is delve right into the mix of the Scotland camp ahead of the opening game of the Six Nations, Wales, on Saturday. Which is going to be a big one, isn't it? France, Ireland on the Friday is a big one, but Wales, Scotland, that's not a victory that they've taken for a while, Mark, is
no,
it? Down in Cardiff.
Every 2 years we just add on another two to the tally. So it was broken in some sense when Scotland won behind closed doors in Glamorous Lanethley in 2020, October, Halloween 2020.
I was there with you. It was
exactly.
Horrible,
we were about the only two of the six people in the stadium that day. But so they have won in Welsh soil recently, but not in Cardiff since 2002 when Gordon Bullock, remember him, scored two tries. So it's a stat that we repeat relentlessly back to the players every couple of years, and you know it hasn't changed. So there's been a multitude of Wales teams come and gone in that team, good, bad and indifferent. 2 years ago everybody went down there thinking Scotland were probably quite considerable favourites, and they still found a way to lose the game. So certainly nothing is going to be taken for granted in these quarters.
Yeah, and Warren Gatland's a bit of like the devil incarnate, isn't he, for Scottish rugby fans sometimes.
He seems to be, and you know, for having had the temerity to always beat Scotland and then not pick underachieving Scotland players for the Lions teams when there's better options, that seems to be the cardinal sin. But you know, I'm actually sort of any dealings I've had with them, that there's certainly no anti-Scottish sentiment come across. But you know, it's also beyond question that Scotland do owe him one and do owe Wales one in Cardiff.
So what we're going to do, listeners, on this pod is speak to a few players, speak to some new faces. Aaron Reid, who as you will hear from his accent, is not necessarily got the most Scottish accent in the world, and nor does Andy Christie, both playing their rugby in England, but Scottish links via their mother's side. We're also going to speak to Luke Crosby as well, and Kyle Rowe, who's got an incredible story, sort of two redundancies and all sorts. Some good tales in there, Mark.
Yeah, he almost sounds like a journalist with that track record, but he's a magnificent tale of resilience, and you know, every obstacle that's been put in his way, he's overcome it, including a horrendous injury on his Scotland debut. I was actually at that in Argentina 2 years ago, and it was just a horrible thing to happen on a day like that, but here he is on the verge of, you know, getting a Six Nations debut.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to delve deep, but just before we do, a couple more thoughts on where you think Scotland are at the moment. So won the first two games of the Six Nations last year, which the first time they'd done that, but still no title since 99, and have never got beyond third in the Six Nations. So is this the year, Mark? Everyone says that almost every year these days, but What do you think?
I'm struggling to convince myself. And, you know, the frustrating thing is that while there's been undoubted progress and an upward trajectory in the last 6 or 7 years under Gregor Townsend, you've still not had that sort of breakthrough moment of going into the final weekend of a Six Nations, still in contention for the title. They've won three games, they finished third, they finished fourth. And in that time have knocked off a couple of sort of historical hoodoos, such as not having won in London since 1983. They've done that 2 from 2. Not having won in Paris since 1999. They won there a couple of years back. So this team have achieved sort of little milestones of their own, but still can't quite go from being, you know, competitive to actually really competing. A 3 away games this year always makes that tougher still. But as ever, so much of it comes down to that first game, because if they do find a way to end this Welsh jinx in Cardiff, win that game, they suddenly have back-to-back home games against France and England, which you'd be looking at going, well, actually, they've knocked off these sides in the last couple of years. Why can't they do it again? Whereas if they lose in Cardiff, you suddenly think, oh, those two look a bit naughty before you then have back-to-back away games in Italy and Dublin, where again it's proved a graveyard of hopes in the last few years. So
yeah. So are you pessimistic, optimistic? You've been
I'm somewhere in the middle. I think there's no doubt that the group kind of get a free pass for the World Cup because of the horror draw they had. They were always very unlikely to come out of that pool, but there was a disappointment there that they didn't really fire a shot in attack, particularly, which is, as we all know, is the real strong suit of this team and had been in the Six Nations last year, the warm-up games last summer. Didn't see any of that in France. So I think there's definitely a level that they can go higher than the World Cup, whether that is enough to then put them into contention in what admittedly is a bit of an open Six Nations, where lots of different kind of things going on with our teams, personnel issues, coaches, players, captains changing. There is a settled look to this Scotland team, but whether, you know, they have quite enough in them to take that next step to winning the thing, I think it's still a very, very big question.
Absolutely. Okay, well, there is a bit of freshness around. We've got some fresh faces on the pod, some older ones as well. So why don't we start with Kyle Rowe, who's got an incredible story. So next on the Ruck, going to go through all the players, but first, Kyle Rowe. Okay, Mark, so next up on the pod, we've got Kyle Rowe, Glasgow Warriors winger. And Kyle, we were talking just before we started recording, it just must be awesome. We'll get into it, but the couple of years you've had with injuries, couple of redundancies, just to be back and playing.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing, to be honest, being back in the setup after almost 2 years away. I know in the summer I came in and trained and everything, but unfortunately didn't go to the World Cup and everything, which I knew it was a long shot, but you always hope that you're going to be able to go. But being selected and being in full time is pretty special again.
What does the Six Nations mean to you as a Scotsman and a rugby fan? Like, what are your early memories of watching the tournament?
Earliest memory, probably not as early as some people, as I actually preferred football more when I was growing up to rugby. So
one of the Glasgow teams, which one's it?
No, it wasn't. There was more like Premier League, stuff like that, that I was kind of enjoyed. Didn't really follow a team or anything either. But now it was when I left school and went and started working in a bar. I mind watching the Six Nations and people were asking me to pour pints and everything during the game, but I was sat there like just watching the game, being like, nah, I'm not pouring you anything, I'm watching the game. So that was probably one of my earliest memories. And I think that was a Scotland-England game at Murrayfield. I think we beat them as well, so like pub was bouncing. So
yeah,
it was
plenty of pints.
It was a good memory, yeah. Pints flying everywhere as well.
So take us back through the last few years of your life, if it's not too harrowing, because a lot's gone on, hasn't it?
Like, yeah.
So should we start, obviously you started in sevens, then COVID hit, so you lost your contract with that. Can you pick it up from there and kind of how you rattled through the last few years?
Yeah, so 2020 it hit. I think I lost my contract at the end of October with sevens, and pretty quickly just had to sort of find a job to pay bills really, which is where Amazon came in, working the night shift like 6 till 2 or 6 till 4 in the morning, either chucking parcels in the these like little boxes, they're quite big boxes, then put on the van so people in the morning can then go and deliver them, or putting them onto a conveyor belt for people to do those jobs. So it was pretty mindless stuff, to be honest, like, and especially working 8 to 10 hours at night, was pretty dark. And then that obviously didn't help my sleep schedule or my mental health or anything, because I'd be getting in at 6-7 o'clock in the morning, sleep until 4, and then wake up at 4, like, oh, it's only 4 o'clock, and then realise I need to be in at 6 o'clock. So I've only really got an hour to yourself to have some food, and then you're back in. That was that until probably about New Year of 2020, and then I was made redundant again by them, which I knew it was always going to happen because I was only a sort of temporary worker. And then from there, that's when Edinburgh wanted me to go in and train with them, but it was a GB training contract, not an Edinburgh or like SRU training contract. So that was more just to keep fit for the Olympics, which again, then I wasn't selected for that. So my contract then ended with Edinburgh the end of June. But luckily during that time I was in talks with London Irish and couldn't sign there quick enough because I knew I didn't have anything anywhere else. And then left everything behind up here and just went for a fresh start down in London.
Yeah, and then you got your cap. It was bittersweet, your debut, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So it's Argentina Tour 2022. Can you describe what happened there that day?
Very mixed emotions that day. When I found out in the team meeting that I was going to be playing, that I was on the bench, started crying just because of like this journey I'd been through and just knowing that I'd kind of made it, if that makes sense. Like all that hard work and sort of not giving up paid off. And then as you saw in the photos and at the game, singing the anthem, I was crying as well. Pretty, very emotional day. Same for everyone back home watching the game. And then, as I said, very mixed emotions with then doing my ACL, probably one of the worst injuries you can do, being out for 9 months.
That was 12 minutes in, was it? Something like that, so, to the game.
I mean, I got through the last 3 minutes of the first half, got myself into the game with a turnover, and then just jumped over somebody in a tackle, and then, just ACL just gone, completely gone.
So that setback too, I suppose. And then you go to London Irish, and our listeners will know what happened to the end of London Irish. Just when you were coming back from that knee injury, they lost. Obviously, all of you guys were made redundant. So
yeah,
setback three. I mean, it's you're cursed almost.
No, hopefully not cursed. But just kind of. I think with what I went through during COVID, held me a lot during that ACL period. It was more of like it is what it is mindset. I'd not been through an injury like that before, but knowing that there was potential of with London Irish going under that I might not have a club again, like I'd already been through that. So like obviously I was stressing about it because I'd proven myself playing for London Irish that I can play at this level, but not knowing if I was going to have a club again was pretty stressful. But after what I'd been through, it was it sort of put me in good stead. And then luckily with Glasgow coming in, It was good them coming in, giving me a contract and hit the ground running with them and been playing pretty much the whole season. So,
as you say, Kyle, that hit the ground running was exactly the phrase I was going to use in terms of the impact you've made at Scotstoun so far this season and obviously has led us to this point when you're part of the Six Nations squad. First game up in Cardiff next week. There is a vacancy on one of the wings with Darcy Graham missing the first couple of games at least. If we were asking you to sell yourself to Gregor, why should it be you?
Oh, I mean, I don't like selling myself because I've never done that. I try and be humble and everything, but it'd mean a lot to me to be able to pull on the Scotland jersey again. I don't want it to just be one with it only being 40 minutes and doing my ACL. But I feel like I've over the course of the season with playing 12 games and everything and scoring what is it 7 tries or something. Like I've shown what I can do. I've proven that I can come back from a pretty bad injury and I feel like I've got my confidence back. Beating players, giving offloads, things like that. So yeah, feel like I'm in a good space if I do get selected.
Good. There are a lot of similarities between the way that Glasgow attack, the way that Scotland look to play the game as well. Does that make it quite a seamless transition, even though you've not been part of this camp for a while?
Yeah. So it was a completely different system at London Irish. So coming back up here and trying to learn a new system while also not getting rid of London Irish's system because I knew I had to go back down there anyways. But with Glasgow and Scotland and also Edinburgh, we all sort of play the same defensively and in attack, so it's been a pretty seamless transition. And also with playing with like Sione, Hugh, Kyle Steyn, boys like that, like I've been able to get to know those boys and what they do on a rugby pitch and what they're good at, and sort of been able to run off them if they make a half break and stuff like that. So yeah, it's been really good coming into training and just trying to bring that confidence that I've got.
The guys who are involved at the World Cup, there's obviously a lot of hurt and frustration from the fact that, I think to a man, they say just didn't produce what we know this group is capable of doing. I mean, coming into that setup, how do you sort of find the mood? Is there a sort of urge to try and really put that better version of the team out in the park?
Yeah, of course. Had a good review last week with what happened at the World Cup, and there's a lot of good conversations being had, and how we're going to take the team forward and just be better this Six Nations. So yeah, we've got a really good plan in place with what we're going to do mentally, physically, and with our game plan as well. So yeah, just looking forward to getting into next week in Spain, and then yeah, going down to Cardiff.
How much resilience do you think you've grown or had to grow with all those things we were talking about at the start of our chat, with the setbacks that you've had? And do you think you're now in a really mentally strong place? Because you've kind of been to the worst ends of rugby, haven't you? So hopefully the best is yet to come.
Yeah, well, I hope the best is yet to come. As I said, I don't want it to just be one cap and done. I want to get as many as I can. But yeah, I think I'm a pretty resilient person with everything that I've been through, which then puts me in pretty good stead mentally, whether I'm selected or not. It's going to put me in good stead, and if I'm not selected, then I'm able to like have that resilience and just sort of better my games and then hopefully get selected, basically.
And what about the dream of playing at Murrayfield? I think you played there for Ayr, is that right?
Played there for Ayr and in the Cup, and then obviously played the 1872 Cup, which is pretty as close as you can get to playing for Scotland at Murrayfield. So running out that day was pretty special, and yeah, it just kind of gave me a taste of what playing at Murrayfield for Scotland could be like.
When it comes to selection, it can't hurt that you can slot in anywhere in that back three as well. It's another string to your bow, surely.
Yeah, exactly. Obviously, back three is so competitive at the minute with myself, Duane, Kyle Steyn, Aaron Reid, Blair at 15, Ross McCann as well. Like, all of us can play at this level, so it's such a competitive spot at the minute. But yeah, with me being able to slot in at 15 as well, hopefully that puts me in good stead for potential selection.
Awesome, Carl. Well, really appreciate you coming on the pod, and all the best. You've had enough bad luck, so he's hoping for some good ones.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks very much for coming on, mate. Cheers. Really appreciate that. Okay, so next on the pod, we've got Luke Crosby. Mark, Big Mac Row.
Indeed, good to see you as always, Luke. The back row, as ever, is a place of intense competition, but you know, you've been putting your hand up very well with your consistency with Edinburgh this year. You must feel in the best possible spot to be making a claim.
Yeah, definitely. Looking at the games coming from Edinburgh, the club, you just need to perform well, because we've got international back rows at the club, like we see at Edinburgh and Glasgow. The competition, every single Six Nations, every single campaign is up there, so you need to make sure that you're on it every single time you're training, every single time you're in the gym playing. But yeah, I've been playing well, so I'm just wanting to go out there and give it everything and show everyone what I can do.
You started the first two games last year, which coincidentally are the ones that we won.
Yeah, good win rate.
Exactly.
Win rate.
I know, maybe we should protect that. But all joking aside, I mean, how much of a, you know, that must have really whetted the appetite to make sure that you are starting games again this time and that you can experience that again?
Yeah, it's it. Like, last Six Nations, start against England away, win. Home against Wales, start that, we win. And then got dropped, so that's pretty much the business of the sport. But nah, that's definitely it. I'm going in to want to start these games and perform consistently throughout the campaign, and it's just one foot in front of the other thing kind of for me. Like, for now it's focusing on this training week, making sure I'm doing everything right, and then going into Wales, if you're in the team, if you're not, just making sure whatever role you get and for the team, you're doing it the best to make sure that the boys play and get that result.
You don't strike us as somebody who lets much get to you, but I mean, you'd only be human, you know, in an experience like that when you think things are flying, you've been going well, the team's winning, and then you're not in the team. Did it take a bit of getting over?
No, I don't think too much into it. Like, the way I've came into this sport, it's kind of, I'm grateful for it. So for me, it's just enjoying it. Like, I go out there and I give everything. Like, whatever happens, I go out there and put my body in line for my teammates, my club or my country. So if I do that, I can hold myself and be proud for my performances. If something's out with my control, and there's both games I thought I played well and I wasn't in the team, so there's nothing that I've done that's done it. If I miss training or I slacked off and never done my extras or never done everything I knew I could, then it would have led me to perform better. I'd be disappointed in myself. But if I hold myself to my high standards, then I play the best of my ability, do my best, then whatever happens. So that's the way I kind of look at it.
It was a fantastic team performance against Wales last year, and a big win. You know, as we all know, that the stats then in Cardiff haven't been great the last 20 years, really. Is that something that the team are speaking about? Because, you know, this group have done well, been able to kind of get these monkeys off the back, whether it's winning in Paris and in London. You've ended a number of these sequences, so kind of time for another one.
Yeah, that's it. Like, in terms of those, whatever's happened in the past, like, we've broke them before, so we can easily do that again. Like, we know this campaign coming forward is big for us, especially coming off the back of the World Cup. We know we've got a lot to prove. Like, as a group, we went out there away in France, obviously losing to Ireland, so we've done we've processed all that, and it's obviously, it takes an emotional toll when you're putting that much preparation into the going into a World Cup, then you're in it, and then all of a sudden it just ends. So it was a different kind of aspect in terms of a competition. If you lose a game in the Six Nations, you've got a game the next week, but you lose against Ireland, it's like, that's it. So obviously we've processed all that, we've reviewed it, but it's very much us, we want to go down there and win, so that's what we're doing.
What's the next level, do you think, for Scotland? It was interesting watching the Netflix series, and Greg, you won the first two games of last year, as you said, which is the first time I think Scotland had done that in the Six Nations. But the talk behind the scenes that we can now see was, that's not good enough still, we need to keep going and going. Whereas maybe 20 years ago, Scottish teams would be quite happy with a couple of wins in the season. But what's this team thinking about, and where are you trying to get to? What's the evolution of the Scotland team?
It's a bit like the way we look at an analysis is, the result doesn't always dictate the performance. So sometimes you can get a really good result, but it's not going to be relevant to how we perform, how we train, and vice versa. If we get a really poor result, we could have done everything and got beaten by the better team. So the way we look at it is, we know what we're capable of because we've done it in the past, and we can see it come to fruition in training. So when we go out there and perform in a game, we know we're better than that. So it's basically not letting the result, if it's a good result, not everything, and we're not amazing. If it's a bad result, it's not that we're rubbish or anything like that. It's being level-headed, being consistent in our analysis. But we know how we're a world-class team. So it's just going out there and showing that consistently throughout the whole campaign.
And do you think that that's the key to breaking the top two, which again is something Scotland haven't done in the Six Nations era? Obviously Five Nations won the last one, but in the Six Nations, third has been the peak, hasn't it, in the final table?
Yeah, that's it. Like, we need to do it. Like, we've broke these records in the past, we just need to go out there and perform, especially if we start well the last Six Nations. But it's just keeping that like kind of foot in the throat mentality. Like, we win another game, we've got to constantly review that Wales game. What can we do better? What can we bring to the next game? Looking at that game, what can we do now? What can we adapt to this specific team? What's working well for us? Tailoring all our training, everything, even down to the stuff in the gym, all your analysis, your recovery. It's all specific. So when we get to that game, we've done, prepped our bodies right, all the analysis is right, and we're going out there to win. So I'm really excited about this Six Nations coming up.
Gregor, in terms of selection, has made it very clear that even the guy, Jamie, who's captained the team for the last couple of years, is by no means guaranteed a place. I mean, for somebody like yourself who's looking to break in as a starter, that must be encouraging, but also a reminder that, you know, you've got to keep your standards high every second of every day, virtually.
Yeah, well, look, that's another thing. I can't control what Gregor does with the team. Like, in terms of players, whoever's in the team, whoever's not, like, it doesn't change anything I do, my behaviours. So, but I'm just going out there, like, I know probably best form, one of the best forms back rows, so I'm just going out there to perform, and if I'm in the team, then I'm going to grab the opportunity with both hands and try and keep that shut.
I know we've probably asked this before, but you know, do you have any preference about which jersey number you're to wear? Does it actually not matter when you're out there, that you'll do the same, look to do the same kind of things anyway?
No, I'll do it all, mate. It means that it's easier to pick me.
Yeah, exactly.
So
6, 7 or 8.
But yeah, I played 8 the start of this season, which was with Edinburgh, which is good. It doesn't change too much because I can play 7, and then obviously at 6 I can jump in a line out. So I can jump in a line out, I can do that stuff, and then scrum at 8 as well. So I'll take any role as long as I get on the pitch.
Just as a last one, Luke, before we let you go, as you said, this Scotland squad over the last few years have been quite good at breaking records. Just what would it mean to the squad to get that Wales one off the back and not winning in Cardiff for 20 odd years? How would that feel to you all?
Yeah, it'd be special, like, definitely, but we know we're capable of it, so it's a weird one because it's not going to be, if when we win, it's not going to be like, oh, I can't believe we've done it. It's almost like we knew we could do it. Like, we all believe we're going to go down there and win. We know we're going to go down there and win, so it's not going to be a mentality of like a surprise. It's just good that we've actually got it. The scoreboard has actually shown what we're capable of as a team, so. But yeah, definitely it's something that we're looking to break.
Yeah, tick it off, next job, there you go. Awesome, Luke. Thanks.
Cheers.
Very much.
Thanks
for joining
guys.
Us.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
So next on The Ruck, we have a new boy in the Scotland squad, Aaron Reid. How are you doing, Aaron Reid? You must be having a great couple of weeks.
I am very much enjoying myself. Yeah, all the lads have welcomed me very, very nicely.
No, it's been a very good first few days. Yeah.
Are you yet at the stage of like initiation songs and things like that, or does that all have to come?
The first night I had to stand up and say some stuff about myself and an interesting fact.
Yeah. Which was?
I actually don't think I can tell you.
Unbroadcastable. Okay. Fine.
Yeah.
Fine.
So I don't think I could say that, but no, they made it as awkward as possible. And I think a lot of lads were cringing watching it happen. So, you know, that's just rugby, I suppose, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Well, we'd love to dig into your story because it is an interesting one. You've played a little bit of the England age group stuff, but I've heard via our friends at Sale that you've got a Scottish granny who's been badgering you quite a lot about trying to play for north of the border. Can you tell us what the real story is?
So, yeah, my dad's side of the family is Scottish. My dad was born in Edinburgh. My gran's from Coldstream, so she's from the border sort of way. Yeah, every time, so I used to go up every summer, like, to Scotland just to go see them, and she'd just say to me, like, oh, when are you going to play for Scotland, sort of thing, and eventually, like, I've been picked in the squad, and it's hopefully I can make them proud at some point, you know, playing, but yeah, no, she's not been badgering me, but she's definitely been
on the case,
telling me I'm Scottish as much as well, yeah.
And how long has the conversation with Gregor been going on behind the scenes? Is this a sudden thing, or has it been in the works?
I think when I first broke through properly at Sale, like playing consistent rugby, he had a chat with me and just said, like, you know, we're looking at you, sort of thing. That was about, hang on, maybe over 2 years ago, but just December gone now, he came down to Manchester, met up with me and just said, like, no, you're seriously in the talks now for, like, getting you in the squad. So obviously, a few weeks later, he gave me a call and said, you know, you're going to be in the squad. Like, just take a bit of time because it's your first time. Speak with your family, you know. And I didn't really need to speak with anyone, to be honest with you. I was pretty much like, yeah, okay, I'll go speak with my family. I'm pretty much it.
2 minutes later, bringing him back.
Yeah. it's been going on for a while, but like now I think the time's right because I feel like I've been playing like my best rugby at the moment. So yeah, I think the time is right definitely to be involved.
And you come into the setup at a time when we're kind of on the lookout for a try-scoring winger of your dimensions potentially. Yeah. With Darcy's unfortunate injury, I mean, you know, all you can do is kind of keep throwing up your hands, isn't it, really, but in terms of what you're doing with Sale and in camp here.
Well, yeah, the main thing for me is like playing well when I'm at Sale, training as hard as I can here, getting myself on the board as much as possible to try and show myself, and you know, hopefully that will get me selected at some point. I'm obviously not expecting anything, but I don't want to be, you know, just happy to be here. I want to try and push and try and get into a squad at some point. But yeah, no, I'm very much enjoying being here as well, so that's good.
Fans of the Premiership who listen to our podcast will know that one of your key things is your flat-out speed. How would you describe your own game? What do you think are your sort of unique selling points that can help you get that test cap?
I'd say, like you said, speed is up there. Say footwork, when I'm on the ball, I think fairly dangerous. I'd say effort, like after kick chases, like even though I'm a small lad, I'll get off the ball and try and compete and that sort of stuff. And also like defensively wise, like I'm a little lad again, but like still try and make my hits, and I think they're the main points of that would get you picked in a squad.
Yeah, well, we've seen this with a few clubs over the years where there's like a young core of guys who grow up and play together and build together, and you guys got to the Premiership final last year with a young side. How much has that helped you in your development that you've got guys of a similar age who are all on this kind of journey together, maybe not all in the same national team? Like, you might have tried to convince Tom Roebuck or others to come with you up north.
Well, that's an interesting one. But no, being like coming through the academy with some of these boys and being there every day with them and getting to a final, like you're experiencing things that with them people and growing up with them people that you probably a lot of clubs don't. But like you're saying about Roebuck there, we were just saying to each other the other day, like, imagine I was on the wing for Scotland, he was on the wing for England, and we were playing against each other.
We
were just looking at each other like, how crazy would
that
be?
Know each other's games inside out. That would be tough analysis, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I know, it'd be a bit weird, wouldn't it, to be fair? We were like, how crazy would that be? And we're like, it's actually possible at some point that could happen. So yeah.
So, and how big in your career has Alex Anderson been? That he seems to be such a galvanising point as a head coach for the Sale guys, and particularly the young lads.
Yeah, I think he is quite a big point because he sort of like backs the young boys. He doesn't just try and play, you know, the experienced lads all the time. He will back younger lads and get them involved. So he pretty much gave me one of my first probably run of a lot of games. So yeah, he's been an important part, and he's quite like on it with mind stuff as well. So, you know, it's strengthening the mind as well and getting you prepared for any situation. So he's been very good, to be fair to me.
Yeah. Selection dependent, obviously, but if you do end up getting a shout that you're going to play in one of these games, is your granny going to be straight on the phone being like, right, I've got to get some tickets to this, come on?
I think there'll be a lot of tickets I need to get, to be fair, because I think there's loads of people up in Scotland that will be like, listen, like we need to come. Like, no matter what game it is, where it is, everyone's saying like we're coming. So my gran will definitely be on the phone to me, getting as many people down as she can. Yeah.
Hopefully that'll be in Cardiff next weekend. I mean, you know, the guys that have been around the squad for a long time have grown tired of us talking about the fact that they've not won there since 2002. But, you know, for somebody coming in from the outside like this, you don't have any of that baggage. You know, it's just...
Were you born then, actually?
Yeah.
3 years earlier, well, I was born, yeah.
But is that what it is, 2002?
Yeah. The Scotland beat one in Lanethley in the COVID year behind closed doors, but haven't won in Cardiff since 2002, so there's a target for you.
And before that was 96 and 92, when the stadium hadn't been built.
Right, okay, so it's pretty long time.
Yeah.
Wow, okay. No, yeah, that's interesting. I didn't actually know that. But yeah, no, I don't have any of that baggage, so yeah. I can't really think about that too much, to be fair. So I just go in with a fresh sort of mind. Hopefully, you know, you never know what's going to happen. But yeah, that is very interesting. I didn't know that.
Do you have any... So if... What year were you born?
99.
Okay. Oh, so the last time Scotland won the Five Nations.
There you go then. It's written, isn't it?
Yeah.
So what would be your Six Nations memories then? What were the things that got you on the sofa when you were a kid?
I remember, it actually wasn't too long ago, but I remember I think England were up by quite a few points.
With the famous draw.
Yeah, I remember I was in a hotel and I was watching that game and I was like, oh my God. Gosh, like the was it 36-0 or something?
38 all in the end, wasn't
it? Having been 31-0 down, I think.
Yeah, and then 31-7.
I remember watching that game and I was literally like, bloody hell, Scotland are playing well. I think it was the second half when they were flying back. So I think that's one of the memories. That's one of the memories I have from that.
We know the players are young, Mark, when their memories of things that happened 4 years ago. Yeah, 5 years ago.
Can't go too far.
No, I know.
We'll remember it.
I remember once interviewing Joe Thokonosiga when he was coming through and asked him about his favourite rugby memories, and he talked about the 2013 Lions tour and George North lifting Is There a Flower over his head, and I was like, oh, okay, that's quite recent, but fine.
No, yeah, I remember that. That was good as well.
Yeah. So what's the goal, what's the dream, what's the aim then for the next few weeks? Is it, like, everyone will want to get that cap, but is that the sort of be-all and end-all for you?
It would be amazing to get a cap, but also, you know, just bettering myself in training, taking it back to Sale, trying to make that better as well. But obviously, like, it's not the be-all and end-all, but I do want to get a cap, so hopefully that does happen.
The World Cup was a pretty bruising experience from a Scotland perspective, and again, we can't hold that against you because you were nowhere near it, but in terms of coming into the environment, what sort of vibe are you getting from the guys in terms of the desire to put out a better version this time?
Well, yeah, there's no like, I feel like the lads aren't holding it as like a baggage like you were saying earlier. Like, I think it's just driving on to the next thing and getting on to the next thing. Like, it's, like we always say, like a next job sort of mentality, but you can't hold on to things like that. But also, at the same time, you can also use it to spark you a bit more. But I can't see any of the lads holding on to any of that sort of baggage, to be fair.
I was just going to ask one last one about it. What's it like being out on that training pitch with Finn? I mean, he's such a probably unique talent in the game at the moment, and the way that he approaches it from a bowler's point of view and the ways that he can bring you into the game. What's that been like so far?
I think like everyone knows what he can do, like, and he wants to bring wings into the game as well, doesn't he? So like for me personally, like you can put the ball like wherever you want it in space, and you'll make line breaks and you'll score tries because of him, because he can just put the ball on a two pins, can't he? So no, yeah, it's definitely good to have someone like that, especially if you're a winger. He'll score lots of tries.
I guess you haven't done that much training with him yet, but can you see comparisons or differences between him and George Ford? Obviously not bad couple of tens to play with in Dublin country.
No, they're very different tens, aren't they? But both of them drive like standards as much as possible, so that they're very similar in that sort of way. But the sort of style, yeah, quite different. But that probably suits the way Sale play, and that definitely suits the way Scotland play. So yeah, it's interesting to see the way both of them play.
And Finn inspired your favourite Six Nations memory. There you go. That comeback against England. One more to come. Awesome, Aaron. I really appreciate you telling your story. Thanks so much for coming on the Ruck.
No worries. Thank you.
Brilliant. Cheers, guys.
Thanks, man.
Good to meet you.
Good luck.
Okay, so rounding off our special behind-the-scenes podcast with Scotland, we've got Andy Christie, Saracens in Scotland. How are you doing, Andy?
Yeah, I'm doing well, thanks. How are you guys doing?
Yeah, very good. How exciting are these days when you're not that far away from the start of the Six Nations for a rugby player?
Yeah, they are. You can definitely feel the buzz. Training's at already feels like I sit at a pretty high standard, which is obviously brilliant. And besides that, it's just been nice to get back in the camp, back seeing all the boys and trying to get a feel of it again.
Yeah. How have you been with the Scotland stuff? Because we know you missed the World Cup because you've still got your scar on your arm. Looks quite gruesome. Listeners can't see it, but Andy's got a big scar on both sides of the arm. So did you break more than one bone?
No, I snapped my radius. It was just quite a bad break and didn't heal properly. So I ended up having 3 operations.
How far apart were they?
It was over a 7-month period was my recovery, so kind of intermittently throughout that, yeah.
So was that one of those that was quite hard to take, or was it to miss the World Cup, which you could have been part of?
I think, yeah, it was tough. So initially, my first goal was... So at first I was told to be 12 to 16 weeks. So as a professional, you obviously instantly think, right, I can do it quicker than that.
Because it happened in, what, April?
Yeah.
Last year, yeah.
And so we had... At the time, we had the Prem final potentially 8 weeks away. And I knew it was very unlikely, but I kind of set my goal as being, okay, let me get back in the contention for that. Had a scan at 6 weeks and he said, look, it's not right. And I had to have another operation, so I had a bone marrow transplant.
Wow, okay.
That was after the final, so yeah, it still wasn't healing properly. And came up here for a couple of days just to kind of get a feel of the camp and stuff. Went back home and then it still wasn't healing right, so Gregor told me that, look, unfortunately it's not looking like it's possible. And then I found out I needed another operation. So I think the Gregor calling to say that it wasn't going to be possible, it was something I knew, but essentially you kind of keep telling yourself, like, it'll be okay, and needed him to essentially say that to me. And that was tough. I think it took me probably a couple of days to allow myself to feel the emotions I needed to feel. And then, yeah, I've been, you know, back playing now for a few months and feeling good about it.
Tell us about bone marrow transplant, because it's not a phrase we hear often in rehab
yeah.
schedules.
Yeah, so the first operation was a normal kind of plate across the break with screws. The second was they basically get a big needle, stick it in your hip, take bone marrow from your hip, inject it into where the break was in order to kind of stimulate the cells to start producing more healing cells or whatever. I'm not a doctor.
Sound very nice. Yeah. That's all I've
known. And then the third operation was another plate on the other side of the bone and a bone graft from my hip. So they chopped off a bit of my hip, put it in where the break still was, another plate over the top of it, screwed through it. And that was agony, in fairness. That one really hurt. The others, I didn't really... wasn't really bothered by it.
So how much of your hip is left then for your old age?
Yeah, there's a couple of scars there as well. I won't lift my top up now. But.
So as much as clearly that's physically painful, can you talk to us about the mental challenge? Because you got to chuck yourself back in the spokes straight away. The position you play,
yeah.
If you're going in half-hearted or thinking about, oh, is my hip all right, is my arm all right, you're going to be beaten to the ball and everything. So how do you process that? How do you get yourself mentally back in the frame of mind?
I was just excited to play again, to be honest. I think it's one of those things, like, for me, I play rugby because I love it. And so I was just excited to play again. It was something I'd missed massively. And my first game was the first Prem game of the season, away to Exeter Chiefs, and they beat us by about 100 points. So, yeah. So I sat on the bench for that game thinking, maybe don't bring me on now. Yeah. But no, I got back into it. And it was weird, like, realised my rhythm kind of wasn't where it had been before. And I feel like you go back into playing and think you're just going to be at the exact level you were. And it took me a few games to kind of get used to it again. And now I feel like I'm in a bit of a flow again and playing. So I feel good.
And that is happening at exactly the right time. That, you know, from a Scotland perspective, Gregor's made it very clear that there are jerseys up for grabs in that back row. That must be music to your ears.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Look, I think everyone comes here wanting and hoping to play, and I'm no different. I've obviously been up here a few times now and would love this to be the one that I start to kick on.
Can you talk to us about the work you've been doing with Callum Clark? I know he works a lot with all of you guys at Saracens, but particularly back row. Ben Earls talked about it and his development, getting back in the England team. What's he done for you?
Yeah, I think he and I have probably worked together for the best part of 3 years now. In recent times, he's helped me in overcoming this injury and understanding that kind of you're on your own journey. And just because, say, a surgeon says to you it's a 12 to 16 week injury doesn't mean it necessarily is going to be. And coming back into form, it's also understanding that you can never be too high or too low. So if I have a good game, it doesn't mean it's the best thing ever. And if I have a bad game, it doesn't mean it's the worst thing ever. So he's very good at helping me, I think, remain level and generally he's also there as a friend and there as a listening ear when I need it.
Yeah, we were talking to Aaron Reed about the kind of friendly competition between guys that sail in that back three, and you've got a hell of a stacked back row.
Yeah, too right.
Stable at Surrey. So how are you competing positively with all those other guys? I mean, Billy Vinopola, Gonzalez, Tom Willis, Ezekwe comes back a bit, Ben Earl, as we mentioned. There's a lot of very talented back rowers up at Surrey, aren't
there? Yeah, there is, but also there's a lot of guys with very different rugby educations. Obviously, you mentioned Juan, Theo McFarland, Samoan.
Yeah, of course. Can't forget him, no.
he's a decent player as well. But Billy, obviously, being more experienced, so there's so much learning I can do there. And again, it's the same as it is here. It's just about trying to bring what you bring and not letting yourself get derailed. If I see Ben have a good game, doesn't mean I need to go and do exactly what he's doing. It's just kind of having confidence in what I'm doing and hoping that the coaches will back that.
Have they helped you get over the injury stuff too? I mean, Billy's had well-publicised injuries with his arms as well. Ben Earl recently, post-World Cup, had a bit of rehab to go through, didn't he?
Yeah. So Billy, I spoke to about it and he kept things pretty simple, in fairness. He just said, look, whatever happens, kind of as soon as the time comes, you just get back on the pitch, just go back to doing what you enjoy doing. And Ben as well, he actually, the week, I think it was around, it was the week I found out I wasn't going to make the World Cup squad. It was his first start for England against Ireland and he invited me to the game. England against Wales, the second test. He invited me to the game and I saw him, I spent some time with him, I went to his place in Devon with him as well. So like he's a very good friend of mine, and he kind of put his arm around me in that way. So yeah, those guys are brilliant.
And were you able to watch Scotland's games? Did you sit in front of the telly? Or, you know, for some guys that would have been too much, you know, knowing that they or feeling that they should have been out there, you know, doing the better. But were you able to take in?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I'm ultimately a fan first. That's how I always see it. So I enjoyed watching it. I was supporting the boys as much as I could. Obviously, the same as they were, I was disappointed with how it went. But, you know, I'm excited for hopefully a massive reaction through this campaign.
As sad as we were saying, you've kind of shown that ability to flip between all three jerseys. And, you know, obviously it's great to have that string to your bow. Do you have any kind of particular preference, or are you equally comfortable in all three?
My preference is where the coach wants to play me.
Good answer.
Diplomat at heart. Does there feel like a bit of freshness? I know you've not had millions of camps with Scotland, but new co-captains, I don't know, there were some records broken last year, but it seems like determination from what we're hearing to keep doing more. Does it feel fresh and exciting to be involved with Scotland at the moment?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's a real hunger in the group. I think we felt that probably today and yesterday in training. The speed and the accuracy was probably at a level I've not experienced, certainly at this stage in the campaign before. So it's a very exciting group and I'm buzzing to be a part of it.
Without wishing you or asking you to talk up one of your rivals, I mean, how excited should we be about Rory Darge? I mean, somebody who's round kind of top class back rowers every day of the week, you know, where is he headed?
Oh, he's a phenomenal player. He's a phenomenal player and obviously his leadership qualities have shone through again since at least as long as I've been here, if not before. And again, I've seen a few Glasgow games. The way he plays there is outstanding too. So yeah, I'm very happy for him. And he's a great boy.
Just as a last one, Andy, before we let you go, we saw when you were first picked the emotions you had at getting picked and your family,
yeah.
FaceTiming and stuff. What would it mean to you to get back in the side and have a strong Six Nations with Scotland?
Yeah, it'd mean everything, I think. You know, that's something that I cherish. I still watch that video sometimes just to, again, remind myself and kind of ground myself. One of the best moments of my life was making my debut and singing the national anthem and seeing my family in the crowd. So it's a feeling that if I could bottle up and sell it, then I'd probably be the richest man on earth. But no, I just hope to get the opportunity again.
Awesome. Well, all the best for it.
Thanks
very much,
Cheers.
Andy. Okay, Mark, so we've heard from all the players. It's a bit like pre-season, isn't it, when everyone goes, oh, it's the best ever and we're going to be the best ever and everything like that. So at the start of our pod, you were sort of erring between pessimism and optimism. Now you've heard from a few of the voices in the camp. Are you changing your mind?
I think I'm still unmoved somewhere in the middle there. I like the fact that, you know, guys who were involved in the World Cup, guys who weren't involved in the World Cup, are all saying that that's been part, that they've kind of dealt with what they feel went wrong there, and I've identified ways to do things better in this campaign, albeit they then actually have to go out and do it rather than talking about it. So that's the next challenge. But I'm still kind of thinking somewhere in the middle rather than two up or two down, frankly.
Yeah, but it's that Wales one, isn't it?
It is. As I Wales say, it comes Cardiff. Down to that. Yeah.
If Scotland were to do that, then it's France at home, which they can do.
Yep.
Hard thing to do, but they've done it, haven't they? So
and we've
it's all about momentum
now. After was it five yeah. or six or whatever
yeah,
it is?
So, exactly. Yeah, exactly. But that's you look at that with all teams, don't you? You just go win the first one, off to a good start, and then you're flying.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, it's one of the biggest Six Nations cliches going is momentum, but it definitely applies to Scotland, and certainly in the context of this campaign. That first game, I think the whole fate of their Six Nations will be decided that day.
Yeah, so I'm going to get you to put your Mystic Mark hat on, get your crystal ball out, and say, of the guys we've spoken to, who do you think we'll be watching on Saturday? Do you think Aaron Reid's got a chance?
I think Aaron Reid does have a chance. As we mentioned in our chat with him, obviously Darcy Graham is out in a massive blow to Scotland for the first couple of games at least, so looking for another blonde bombshell, small, fast winger. Oh, and there's another one. So certainly has a chance, albeit Kyle Steyn is now back fit after his ankle injury and performed exceptionally well in last year's Six Nations when Graham was injured again. So he's there as well. I think Andy Christie and Luke Crosby have both made excellent cases at club level to slot into that back row where there's huge competition, but you know, Gregor Townsend has made it very clear that their jersey's up for grabs. Jamie Ritchie has been deposed as captain, so potentially, you know, or definitely faces a fight to actually start in the team. So I wouldn't be at all surprised to see either of them as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, look, that's been an awesome insight into the Scottish camp. Really appreciate the SOU letting us come up and do this. It's good to get out of London sometimes, isn't it? I'm often stuck in London Bridge, so lovely to be up in Edinburgh. And let's see how the Scots get on in the Six Nations. It's already come around. It's France, Ireland on Friday, Italy, England on Saturday, and then, as we've been talking about, Wales, Scotland on Saturday. Mark, I can't wait. What about you? Where are you going to be on the weekend?
Down in Cardiff. So,
yeah, of course
you are. Indeed. So, much looking forward to it.
Six Nations Eve. There you go, everyone. So, I hope you've enjoyed our little foray up north. Like, subscribe, share, tell all your mates, leave a review, all the usual stuff, and enjoy the opening round of the Six Nations. We're here already, but thanks very much to all of you for listening to this special ruck from the Scotland camp.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.